Welcome back to A Fresh Story, the podcast where we have conversations about brave decisions to start over again. I'm Jenny.
And I'm Olivia, and we're so glad you're here today. We are back with our friend Cole, and we're so excited to have her here today. We're doing a lot of these episodes with some of our favorite people again, because we are thrilled to just be in, we like to say, fresh conversations with you.
Yeah, and because we get to steal an hour of their time and pretend it's for the podcast.
Yeah, exactly.
Motivation's unclear.
So thank you for taking the time here today, Cole, and so good to see your face.
I'm so excited to be here talking with you both. Here for an hour or two. I'll get my tea. You tell me.
Exactly. Perfect. So what has been going on since we last chatted with you? I know there's been some kind of cool things happening in your world.
I think we last chatted probably close to when the hardcover book came out. Mm-hmm. And now it's out in paperback. I'm just excited to have it in more forms out in the world. Yeah. And what is so exciting for me about a book like this to be out in the world is that I'm really starting to hear from readers. I get emails every time I have a day that I'm thinking about something like sales, or, you know, to be honest, just that kind of stuff.
I
get an email from someone who is going through this or fresh out of it, and the book made them feel less alone or gave them some hope that they could get better. And those emails are just incredible and remind me why I'm doing this in the first place.
Yeah,
you know, so it's been exciting for me.
I love that. So if you could give new listeners and veteran listeners a refresher of your book and like a little synopsis.
Absolutely. My book is called What's Eating Us? Women, Food, and the Epidemic of Body Anxiety. Mm-hmm. And as someone myself who struggled for decades, probably on and off with an eating disorder, and went into treatment and found my recovery so incomplete and unsatisfying. That experience was really the impetus for the book, because I'm a journalist and I decided to approach my recovery like a journalist instead of as a patient, because that was getting me nowhere. And so I interviewed experts all over the world. I spoke with hundreds of other women. I found new treatments that aren't being used yet. I got into diet culture that kind of holds up this state of us always restricting food and dieting in these cycles. And I found a lot of other women who were in similar predicaments. I found out why we weren't getting better. It's not our fault, spoiler alert. And I found a lot of hope. So that was the idea of the book, is to create a roadmap for why we're here, how we got here, and how to get out.
Yeah. And I mean, we have a whole other episode about this. So if you want to go listen to Cole's first episode, we'll link to that, obviously. And I mean, I tell this story all the time, but I picked up your book randomly at the library and it changed my life. And I, one of the beautiful parts of social media, right, is I got to reach out to you and say, I'm obsessed with you and you have to come on my podcast. And so, you know, something we are really, you know, one of our guiding principles at Fresh Starts is kind of that pursuit of joy, right? How can you pursue joy even when times are hard and even when you're going through? So something we wanted to talk to you about today is like, what does it look like, you know, especially let's talk about diet culture, right? I feel like that's the hot topic right now. We're all trying to kind of claw our way out of diet culture. So what does that look like to be on the other side, right, of kind of like coming down that journey? And how can we find our joy? So what have you found in talking to people or your own story about that side?
This is such, in the best way, a complex question. It's what I love about it, because it is so hard to find joy in food, because we are, especially women, but all people, I think, born into this diet culture, not just about losing weight, dieting, and all that nonsense, but about health now. That's on top of it. And then we look at these weight loss drugs, and what do? They make us not crave foods. They make us not want to eat. They try to, you know, and if you really wanted to get into a conspiracy nitty gritty about diet culture, keeping women underfed, which affects our cognition.
It's a literal cult tactic, right?
I'm getting right to it, right? But it is a literal cult tactic.
My favorite topic.
Right? So there's that. Mm-hmm. I think recovery, the first step, even before joy with food, is building your relationship with food, period. For me, in eating disorder recovery, one of the quote assignments is to eat sort of mechanically, like you eat breakfast, then you eat a snack, then you eat lunch, whether you're hungry or not, because you may not have hunger mechanisms. And I still have faulty hunger mechanisms, which I think is a brain thing. It's a predisposition. Yep. It's we can get chicken egg with the eating disorder, but it's a predisposition, right? I rarely feel hungry. So for me, mechanical eating was actually really helpful. I didn't think it would be, but it's helpful because it helps me with my anxiety. It helps me with, I had another moment recently with my son where he wouldn't get on the potty. I have a 3-year-old and I was, and I even said aloud, I was like, I'm having a moment where I haven't eaten. So I'm not at my best. I can't help us all right now. I have to go eat. Like that's kind of, that happens like a couple times a week for me. Yeah. If I'm honest.
Yeah.
So I know I'm departing from the joy
thing. This is the conversation.
But for me, there is something still, and I feel really solid in my recovery. I'm not dieting anymore. I'm not doing any of that bullshit. I don't want to say bullshit because if someone is dieting, I get it. I get why you'd want to diet. Yeah. I get why you'd want to be on these. It makes sense. It's appropriate.
Yeah. Well, we'll get
it's
into that.
Appropriate response to our culture, right?
Yes.
But it's very rare that I'm actually with my schedule with a young child really enjoying food. I was just recently in New York for like 48 hours for my mom's birthday with my husband, with my son. And I actually made a list of the restaurants I wanted to hit because there were a couple places that I was like, I cannot leave this city.
Yeah. Let's talk about where you went.
Getting out of these places. And what was so funny is that, like, when you go to a restaurant with a 3-year-old, you can't really enjoy your meal.
It's not
either.
Fun.
No, no.
We just talked to Paige, who does like a lot of talk about domestic equity and things like that. Mm. And we asked her, she's 4 kids that are like under 7 or 9
oh
or
my
something.
God.
I know. She said, I was like wondering, I was going to ask her, like, why. And then I saw another video that she did, where she was like, I just wanted to get through the diaper stage as quickly as possible. So I just packed those babies in. But we said, what's, you know, our question at the end of the episode, what's the last food you ate and really loved? And she goes, I am not in a place where I love food right now. I'm so exhausted by being a mom to 4 kids. It's just so much like I'm just eating to like eat. Like, so I think also adding the 3-year-old to all of that is quite a lot.
But you have a moment, you know, we went to this restaurant in New York called Morandi, which my husband and I went on our first date to, and it's delicious, delicious food. We met a couple friends there, just delicious Italian food. And it wasn't a relaxing meal because we're kind of tag teaming, chasing my toddler around the restaurant. But just having a couple moments, I think those moments are just shorter than they would be for someone with
you savor them. Yeah.
Where it's like, this is delicious.
Yeah.
Okay. I gotta go. Gotta go. I'm up now. Yeah. I'm up. Right. But even just having that small moment of enjoying food for food's sake, not for fuel, which I'm so often thinking. I mean, even though I'm like half Italian, I came from that culture of like food and celebration. Mm-hmm. It's not my mindset most of the time, at first because of eating disorder recovery and then because having a young child.
Yeah.
But I really appreciate those pockets of, oh, that's good. They're just short now.
You know, that like just lit something up for me, Cole, is that it's not just about food with that too. It's about everything with joy, especially in early parenting, right? Mm. Or whatever you're going through. I mean, I remember going through my divorce and saying to Jenny, I feel really shitty as a parent that I'm so depressed all the time. How I'm going to look back on this and think like my entire children's life, right? And Jenny said to me, you have to, same thing. You have to find the little moments of joy, right? And so it's like those little pockets. I love that you said that, of like sitting down and just saying like, I'm going to savor these couple bites of food. That's huge. So what did you eat? We need to know.
What you ate at the restaurant. And then I would like to know every other restaurant that was on your list for the city.
100%. So at Morandi, I ate this lemon pasta with Parmesan. I had it without the Parmesan because that I'm not eating dairy now.
Right,
the pasta tasted a little homemade, and I'm not going to be like, list the ingredients of the pasta for me. I'm just going to, I'm the kind of vegan.
Safe trafe is what they call animals. It. Do you know that term, safe trafe?
No.
It's a term from the Jewish community when they started going to Chinese food restaurants and they were like, we know there's probably pork in there. We don't really want to know. It's safe trafe because trafe is like things that you're not supposed to eat. And so it's like just, we're not going to look too closely at it.
I love that word. Yeah. I mean, So it's exactly what I was doing. Safe trafe. I'm going to remember that. I was just not, can I do make it without the Parmesan? And then I tasted the pasta and I was just like, this is melting in my mouth. It was phenomenal. And I don't drink much anymore, but I did feel that way too with a glass of wine. Like this is a nice moment.
Yeah.
You know, and I had some good friends that I haven't seen in real life since the start of the pandemic.
Yeah.
And just like hugging them and leaning my head against one of their shoulders and having it's the whole moment. It's not just the food. You know, though sometimes it is just the food, but this one, you know, it's just about, so we went to Mirandi the first night we got in, we had that, like, we're exhausted. It's 8 o'clock at night, but it's 5 o'clock in our bodies. Do we go to a restaurant? Do we go to sleep? That whole jet lag game.
Yep.
And the answer is pizza. And that's what we did. We went to this place that, you know, I haven't lived in New York for over 10 years, but it was still there, which I love, called Arturo's. And they have great, like, pizza. There was someone at a piano singing. It was just like, what is this? Thank you, New York. We just got here.
The moment, right? You had the moment.
The moment. And I sipped what was like a really not great glass of wine, but that, you know, their thing is pizza. I would never knock their pizza. The wine was not good.
They don't make it.
They don't make it. But it was like a nice, quiet moment for a second of like having, just feeding yourself and having this environment. So Arturo's, Mirandi, and then there's this place, Cafe Jetan, which has this great Moroccan couscousy thing that I always get. And I love the vibe of that place and also that dish. But again, this was a situation where we went there for lunch. My sister was there. It's very cramped. I mean, I would never call it cramped until returning and trying to find a place to put a stroller, right? All that.
Call it cozy. And then once you have a kid, it's cramped.
And, you know, like my son was like reaching over and like scratching the back of a man sitting in the other chair. You know, like fortunately, the man didn't seem to feel it. He was eating and enjoying his meal. So
curb your enthusiasm.
But you know, so those were some meals that we had. And then of course bagels, Russ and Daughters. All of your bagels.
Did you get any arugula from the Russ and Daughters? No, you couldn't.
We did not. But they have the babka and the whole know, and like and my son got to have that experience of like going into a crowded you know, great little like fish bagel place and the person behind the counter like reaching down and handing him a bagel while we wait in line.
Why does that make me want to cry? That makes me like literally want to cry.
My childhood, like getting bagels with my dad and they always like hand you a bagel. And so he's having that, you know, moment. So yeah, so it wasn't like a culinary tour. It was like a culinary HIIT workout.
Well, Olivia and I always say, you know, she's got her two boys and we're like, well, nothing's really fun with like little kids. Like there's a lot of things that are, but they're usually at home and not out in the world. And you have to grab these little moments. I mean, I think we've both had those times with her kids where we're like, we're all sitting and having a great meal for 3 minutes. And then the rest of it's kind of a shit show.
And then somebody gags and you're like, okay, great. Well, I love that you went back to places that you love. Like you went back to old haunts. Is there any reason for that or do you just love those places?
I think I love those places and it's just like grabbing pieces of New York that remind me of something or that places that were good to me when I lived there, you know?
And you're in LA now, is that right?
Yes.
So as and you grew up in New York, that's correct?
I grew up in Pittsburgh, East Coast. Northern California. Yeah, a little back and forth a little bit, but primarily East. Yeah.
So what did you get in New York that you don't like, was it the bagels that you cannot get in LA?
I think bagels is the first answer. Yeah. And then probably pizza, though there's some good pizza places I'm discovering in
it's
LA
different.
that are close, that like they get close. And sometimes I just feel the food in New York is more, not always, but more vibrant.
Yeah. Well,
interesting.
There's a whole conversation there, right? I mean, LA is very much in the industry, whether it wants to be or not. And like, mm-hmm. I think that there's a vibrancy that gets lost if you're thinking too much about what's in the food and the diet of the food and if it's healthy. Right. And if it's, you know, I don't think I'm going to go to Erewhon for like a vibrant meal.
Correct.
Yeah.
So talking about diet culture, I feel like there has been a major shift, right? Like in the last 10 years and, you know, I'm sure in your studies of us women trying to figure out what happened to us, right, in this diet culture world. Mm-hmm. Now, I would like to just, because you're here, I just want to ask your opinion a little bit.
Yeah.
On what's happening now with all of these weight loss drugs that are coming in and how that intersects with kind of, I feel like we were on a good path, right? We were like, we're kind of doing the thing. We're helping each other. We're trying to get out of this diet culture. And then this whole other thing came into the picture. What's your thoughts on that?
I mean, this is so complex and so important to talk about because, it's so much.
Yeah.
I think what is so tricky when these drugs, and some of these drugs are for weight loss and some of these drugs are for diabetes and being used off label for weight loss, right? Yeah. So we'll just talk in terms of for people not taking these for diabetes.
For health reasons.
Right. For people taking these for weight loss
reasons. For the express reason of weight loss,
This idea of like, oh, I can just take this pill and lose weight. So that solves that problem.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So we were getting into such great nitty gritty with talking about body and talking about diet culture. And now what's so crazy to me, I'm not going to mention these companies by name, but we know, is that these weight loss companies that have been making so much money off of us are now saying, you know what, guys? Sometimes diets don't work and they're not great for everyone. But you know what does is that we now have these drugs we can give you. We're partnering with this telemedicine. Right. We have these drugs. That to me is like not hilarious. That's the wrong word. But it's like these companies have been saying, eat whatever, eat, you know, this many points, this color, red foods, green foods, all this crap. And they've been telling us that if you do the system right, you will lose weight, which is good, which P.S. losing weight is good for you. That's a good thing.
Right.
And all of this messaging and all of this money and all of this, you know, ignoring the idea that most of their customers are repeat customers, which means their product doesn't work. I mean, if there were any other business model in the world where you went back, mainly most customers are repeat customers because it didn't work. I mean, that's insane to me that that's so lucrative. Now, even they are saying our product might not really work for you guys. I mean, they're hedging. They're not saying completely. Yeah. And now they're selling these drugs, which you can make a lot more money selling drugs than selling, you know, a plan. So it's just crazy to me that they are now completely, you know, even more doubling down on conflating weight and health and selling everybody drugs as like the quick fit. You don't have willpower? Don't worry about it.
We got you.
Yeah.
I think it's funny because you said if there was any other industry that could get away with this, and the only other one I can think of, and we just talked to Shaney Silver about this, is the dating app industry. And it's the same thing, right? It's going to work. You just got to keep coming back. You just got to keep coming back. And then suddenly now they've been sort of like this, right? Dating apps and the diet companies and the weight loss companies. And then the weight loss companies got the secret pill, right? They got magic and they're going off in this way. And it's like, if you're willing to throw aside your whole business model that quickly, it's almost like you always knew it was never going to work. And you are always scamming everyone by just saying, just develop an eating disorder, right? Just develop all of the attributes of an eating disorder because you need to be socially acceptable.
And I think what is so tricky about eating disorders and something I learned while researching the book is that so many people have some degree of eating disorder. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to say everyone has. I'm not going to make some blanket statement like that. But eating disorders are chronically underdiagnosed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Chronically underdiagnosed. I mean, I can't tell you how many doctors I actively saw while I had an eating disorder and I did look a little bit like I had an eating disorder. I was at a lower weight. A lot of people have eating disorders and they don't present in a way that we culturally look at. Mm-hmm. You can't look at someone and see if they have an eating disorder, but we have an idea of that. But, you know, doctors aren't educated about this. I think so often people are not diagnosed with eating disorders. And so if you have people who have some degree of dysregulated, disordered eating, maybe they do have a full-blown eating disorder.
Yeah.
They are not diagnosed. They can access these drugs and get much sicker.
From a physiological standpoint, I think one of the interesting things that these weight loss drugs do is that they say that they quiet the food noise. Mm. And that a lot of people, and I think I know about the food noise. I think Olivia and I talk about this constantly of like, I had a bowl of pasta for lunch today. I wanted pasta. I have a lot of, I have a dairy allergy, Cole, so I can't eat cow's milk, but I can't eat buffalo and sheep. And they're shockingly hard to get buffalo and sheep milk like cheeses here, but they had them at the grocery store. They had Pecorino Romano and they had buffalo butter. So I bought both of those and I was like, how am I going to use them? Because I did this with the goat's milk camembert at Christmas and I bought way too much and then it went moldy and like you have to eat them. So for lunch, I made myself a bowl of pasta with a nice fat pat of butter and some passata and lots of grated Pecorino Romano. And my food noise is like, you can't eat pasta for lunch. You can't eat like there, you know, it's just like that kind of like repetitive and I fight through it, but it's constant and it's there. And I think it's interesting because I know that a lot of people are using these drugs and it's suppressing their appetites and it's making them lose weight. And we can get into that conversation of all these actresses being like, I just walk and I just eat, you know, it's like, suddenly the walking is working. Suddenly everybody's walking is working. But I understand the desire to quiet the food noise. Like I really do. And you have to wonder the intersection between things like anxiety and obsessive compulsive disorder and eating disorders, because it's all, our brains are within us, right? It all happens in here. But like, I understand the desire to quiet the food noise. That makes sense to me.
There was something I read recently about people taking some of these weight loss drugs that were now malnourished.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I think what is so just disheartening to me is how food has become kind of an enemy that we have to combat. And I just remember this was when I was kind of in recovery, not super recovered, before I wrote the book, which I think is when I sort of completed for me, my recovery, I believe. But I had been sick. I had like a terrible flu and like 102 fever and all this kind of stuff many years ago. And I had lost weight from having a flu.
Right.
And I sat down to, there's no unpretentious way to say this. I sat down to meditate, which I no longer do, but I would do it like a couple times a week.
Meditation's fine.
I still try to do a little bit. No, but I mean like the regular meditation practice is so aspirational for me. I'm nowhere near. But in that moment, I was sat down to meditate and I was thinking about this idea of like losing, and I felt so tired and so weak and so sick. And from the outside, I didn't look like I needed to gain weight. I mean, by whatever our definition of whatever.
Right.
But for my body, I had definitely lost weight. And I thought this idea of my body talking to me, thinking, are you out of your mind, lady? Like, we've been busy over here fighting this fucking flu. Can I swear on this show?
Yes, of course. Okay. Of course.
So my body thinking to me, like, we've been busy battling this fucking flu.
Yeah.
And you're thinking about, oh, should I eat bread or should I enjoy this weight loss? You know what I mean? Like, it is fucking insane. And you know, I even thought at one point when I was in recovery, gee, am I always going to be just thinking about food? Is it never going to end?
Right.
And I looked back, I looked down at my cat, Isabella, who is always thinking about food. She's an animal. She just always wants some food. She's like, is it time for dinner yet? Is it time for breakfast? Yes. I'm going to sleep. And now, so like, we're animals. Like, we are supposed to be thinking about food.
Yes.
It's so interesting, Cole. Like,
that's our job.
The biological imperative, yes.
I saw a social media post. I follow so many, like, anti-diet, you know, Instagram accounts. And there was this great social media post that was, like, five things that diet culture told us were wrong about our bodies. And one of them was that it's, like, unhealthy to get out of breath when you walk upstairs. right? And they were like, everybody gets out of breath when they walk upstairs. Right. You walk, your body's moving, right? It doesn't mean you're unhealthy. And I think so much of the work that you do and that like all, a lot of these, you know, anti-diet culture activists and stuff do is like normalizing, right? Your body. And I think one of the things for me with those weight loss drugs is that for so long, right, and you alluded to this in the beginning, and I want to get back to this with kind of this taking the agency, right, out of your body because you are, you know, maybe not getting the nourishment you need and like this, all this stuff, right? And when you have the weight loss drugs, you are also taking the agency out of your body.
Yeah.
You're right,
disconnecting and so, your body from its natural.
Right, and so then how can you pursue joy? Right, how can you love food or love life if you're so disconnected from your body because you're using a weight loss drug to get to a certain size because it's culturally standard? Right, I can't. That's kind of keeps going through my head,
and it's almost like no one wants to hear you have to eat.
Right. Yeah.
Like no one wants to hear it. It's you know I've been getting into lately. Sorry, I don't want to.
No, you go. You go. You.
I've been getting into weightlifting with I'm very, you know, into. I do it like once a week now.
Love it.
And I used to do a CrossFit, but that was not super healthy for me. And then I got injured and then went to physical therapy where everyone else in the room had an injury from CrossFit.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, where do you go? Where do you go? We were all but I've been doing weightlifting, which is slow and great for me, and I love it. And I don't think about results in any way except for lifting heavier shit, and I can kind of mark it by, is it easier to lift the cat litter bag or is it easier like that?
Practical
excites me.
I love
really
that
excites me. But what has been very cool for me about weightlifting, and this is the only exercise, and I've done them all, that does this, is my body starts craving really specific foods the day I've lifted weights.
Interesting.
So like for dinner or even for lunch, if I've done it in the morning, if I've lifted heavy weights, I want pasta. I want like food. I want food. And I don't normally feel hunger, like stomach growling hunger. Yeah. As I said, I have that like kind of like mental crash, but not hunger. So it's so cool to observe, oh, here's a day I lifted weights. I want pasta. Oh, that makes perfect sense because I've been lifting weights. I need to eat more today. This is more exertion in a different way than I've done other days. And noticing what your body wants in whatever that looks like, even if you don't experience hunger, say you're feeling that anxiety, that mental kind of crash, and you're like, I need a glass of orange juice or whatever it is to like get that blood sugar. Just being in touch with your body, I think, is the first step.
But isn't it so convenient for a capitalistic society to keep us out of touch with our bodies? Right? Isn't that very important for both women and men to keep you disconnected from your body so that you don't feel – you don't listen to it and you don't rest when you need to rest, but you rest when the boss tells you to rest? Like I think – I think of the Industrial Revolution sort of like started all of this in a way, because before that people ate when they were, you know, hungry, and not that it was like uncivilized, but like there wasn't this concept of industry. There wasn't these factory jobs that you got on a line and it was 8, 8, and 8, you know, 8 hours of work, 8 hours of rest, 8 hours of sleep. Like we had to conform. We had to take our bodies and force it into this 8, 8, 8
system.
You know, paradigm system. That's not how we're supposed to live, right? That's not. We're supposed to sleep when we're tired. And we're supposed to also say, like, you know, women, especially as you hit like perimenopause and menopause, like our sleep cycles change. But we're told we need 8 hours of sleep a night because why? Well, really, because 8, 8, and 8, right? And so I think all of that makes so much sense. And I think it's such an exciting thing when you get to that point and you're like, oh, I really want this. And bad foods are the foods that make you feel bad. Not because they're bad for you. And like, I think for me, I was thinking while you were talking, it's so funny how like sometimes I will crave vegetables and the best thing I could eat is a bag of cherry tomatoes at that point. But it feels like confusingly subversive because you're like, I'm not supposed to want vegetables. Vegetables are the thing you like hold your nose and force in your mouth, you know? Actually, if you listen to your body, if you get connected to it, there will be times it's like cucumber and salt. That's what we got to do right now. We just want some like hydration and something crunchy. And but it's convenient for society to keep us separated from that.
And if you look also at people who experience food scarcity.
Yeah.
Yep.
Right? They're at another end of this where they don't have access to food, or they're not able to eat as frequently as those of us who have food. Mm-hmm. And that creates the same sort of cycle where people are very hungry when they have access to food. They will eat more than they would otherwise because they have been inadvertently restricting food, not intending to.
Right.
We know that food restriction affects cognition. So when we are dieting, when we are restricting food, or when we don't have access to food, our brains aren't functioning on all cylinders.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And so it keeps people in this state.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. It's funny, Cole, I was thinking just this morning while I was thinking about this conversation about the question, what's the closest what's the closest anybody's ever come to like a cult, right? What's the closest you've been to? And for me, it was being in the paleo community. And I was like a diehard Whole30 paleo as they come person for years until I realized it was just an eating disorder again, right? And the more that I talked to people who were also in that community – and that community has shifted majorly in the last 10 years. A lot of the original quote unquote cult leaders, I'll say, have left that kind of, you know, paleo world and have pivoted to other things and now are, you know, kind of focused on healthy at all size or whatever, you know, that whole movement is. And I know people get that way with CrossFit and different like, you know, weight loss communities and diets and things like that. And it's again, it's just that same cycle, right? It's like a religion. Yeah. And and it's, you're so trained to think it's like the best way to do the thing because we all just need to lose weight because that's the only goal of life.
Yeah. And you know, when you're on a different side of it, you know, if I ever, look, the thoughts come. You can't help having these thoughts when you're living in this world, right?
Yeah.
So you'll have a thought like, oh, should I eat differently? Should I do this? Should I do that? And then I kind of get back into, you know, I'm eating three meals a day when I can. I'm feeding people in my household.
Yeah.
I move every day. That's it. Like, that's it. I'm not, you know, competing in a dance off. I need to, you know.
Yeah.
Right.
So we kind of have to remind ourselves what is required. What do our bodies need? And start there. But it's very hard to. I was going to say divorce yourself.
Yeah, from, I love that term. Yeah.
From that when you're in this world. I mean, I was at a dinner and I realize that I hear it more. It's like my ears are a little different. Mm-hmm. But everyone was talking about the eating. Oh, an extra piece of bread. Should we get more bread? Oh, these olives are good. Like everyone was. Well, tomorrow I'll do it different. Like it's all anyone was talking about.
Yeah,
it's all anyone was talking about. And I was just. I didn't say anything because you don't want to like be that person. Yeah. But I was just clocking every single sentence of it, and it was all about how, essentially, what we were doing was wrong.
Yeah.
Where I think in reality, one of the most rebellious things we can do is eat regularly.
Yeah, 100%.
There is that old, and we don't really, you know, I won't actually say his name. There's a comedian that did a bit who I don't want to platform here, but. He used to have a bit about how when you ask people if they want to have fries, they act like you're asking them if they want to do drugs. Like that's like that. They'll like, ooh, should we be bad and get a plate of fries? And it's like, no, we can just eat the fries. I was talking to a friend today who's pregnant and I'm not. And she was saying that all she wants is noodles. She just wants to like shove noodles in her mouth. And I was like, that is my everyday life. Like, and I was so happy to finally relate to somebody about that. I was like, I get it. And I relate. And I was like, and you should just eat as many noodles as you want, but like I think, you know, it's so much more fun. I find it so much more fun to talk to people about the foods that they love and that they ate than to talk about like, what are you doing to keep yourself small? What are you doing to punish yourself? I love talking to people about what they eat. It's my favorite.
And what would it be like to live, you know, in a different culture? And I don't know the answer to this, so it's sort of rhetorical the way I'm asking it, but where rice is a fundamental part of every single meal, or where noodles are a daily occurrence, and there's nothing wrong with that. Like, you know, it's interesting to think about where we live, where, you know, I just recently saw, what was it? It was in the back of something. It was something that I actually thought it very funny. It was either like some sort of like chip or pasta or something where it said like a paleo food. And I was like, these are lime flavored chickpea chips.
Yeah.
And I promise you, no cave person ever ate these.
Right. No.
Right.
Yep. Yeah. It's true.
Yeah. Yeah. It's all related, right? It's all related, like the food and the body and the sense of joy and the sense of like wanting more, right? Mm-hmm. Like every time I think about like dieting, I always think about being small. I don't want to be small. I want to be a big person, right? I want to have a big life. And I think like it's all related. So how, you know, once, like you said, I love that you kind of clock your time to eat, because I'm similar and I have, you know, I know you, we've talked about this, but I have binge eating disorder. And for me, I have to make sure to eat three meals a day or my brain will at night will say you didn't eat enough, even though I did.
Right.
Right. And so then it will like force me down to the kitchen to go get some more food. Right. Cause I'm, but yeah. Physically I did eat enough. My body's fine. Right. But my brain didn't clock that. And so for me, I literally have to see myself eat the three meals a day. And so it's taken me too a long time to think. I constantly repeat to myself, you're allowed to enjoy food. You're allowed to enjoy food. Mm. So where did that part of the journey kind of for you, Cole, like start, you know, creeping in about like, I'm not just going to clock food, but I'm going to enjoy this meal or those pockets of little bites sometimes?
Yeah, it's so, such a great question. I think about, there's a relearning of what you enjoy, and it's going to be maybe different from what you enjoyed as a child. But for some people, it's returning to something they enjoyed as a child.
Yeah.
Like there's, I have a friend who has a background in like the restaurant cooking world. And we had lunch the other day and I said, is there a dressing that can make everything taste like a hoagie? Because I don't want a hoagie. I don't eat meat. That's not my vibe, but I would love to just make more things in my life taste like a hoagie.
I love that. Mm.
And he gave me this great, you know, salad dressing recipe from like Smitten Kitchen. It was like a great, like oregano-y.
Yeah, vinegar-y. She does like a grinder salad or something, right?
So, I think, and it was like, and so I've been putting it on, like I have like a salad every day. And I just put that dressing all over it and I'm so happy. And that is something, that's a flavor I really, really enjoy, like a combination of flavors. But it kind of took a minute to get there and think about that and arrive at that. But I think figuring out what we enjoy is asking ourselves the question and experimenting, and trying to loosen up the rigidity of it. And also, I probably said this when we last spoke, but I'll say it again. We have to also remind ourselves that all the messages that we think are internal are actually not internal. They've been given to us. And so we don't know what too much food is or too little food, right? We don't know that for our body.
Right.
We don't know it at all. And so we have to learn and think about it. And all of these rules, like, you know, have a glass of water after you feel more full. Like it's all made up. Like, do we need 8 glasses of water a day? I don't know. I think we're okay. Like, I just think that all of these things that we've been hearing for so long that we don't know if they're true.
Yeah.
We have to test for our individual bodies.
Right.
Yeah. And that's part of reconnecting with your body. And that's part of going, when I, you know, eat dairy, I don't feel so good afterwards. So dairy for me is a bad food. Or when I, you know, vegetables, I actually feel really energetic and it makes me feel really good and full. Like, and when I drink this much water a day, I actually feel great and I sleep well and I, you know, but so much of it is connecting with your body and then listening and tuning in a quiet way. And I think we're so conditioned not to do that.
Well, and isn't that all tied into kind of
women's voices changing over the last 30 years, right?
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and like how when, you know, we were raised even in the 90s, people weren't interested in hearing what we had to really say as girls, right? And now we're raising our children to think every thought and feel every feel and have the big emotions, right? And, you know, and my kids don't feel the need to stuff their face with this or that because they're allowed to speak freely. And there's a connection there, right? Mm. There's got to be.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I think you're absolutely right. And just, you know, I think for also many women and maybe men too, but we're just not talking about them right now. You're just busy and tired and carrying so much that you don't have those, you don't have the time
space
to do this work. Right. And I think that is, you know, you can't talk about food without talking about, you know, as Jenny brought up, capitalism. We can't talk about food without talking about domestic labor. We can't talk about food without talking about all of these things. Yeah. And is it having just a minute, like 3 minutes to tune in to like, oh, that oregano's delicious? You know, could it be more? Mm. But I think also so many of us in this culture are just so tired, harried, overwhelmed with, you know, yes, childcare, but it could be if someone doesn't have a child, taking care of an elder relative,
or just their fiance for some of
us. Their fiance.
Yeah.
It's just life itself is so, and so you don't have the time to do this. It's challenging. And
women are very conditioned. I'll say this too. I actually just saw a video about this too, to put your desires last. So if you, let's say you have kids, it's like, what are the kids are going to eat? That's going to come first. I'm going to prioritize that. And then what am I going to make for me and my husband for dinner? And it's like, oh, I'm going to make something he likes. And when you make something you like, I used to do this with my ex. I'd like make food and he'd be like, there's too much pepper on this. And I would be like, I like it this way. If you want to make it, make it. If you want to make it differently, you make it. And I think, but we're so conditioned to prioritize ourselves last. So we'll, like, this video is a woman being like, I'm making enchiladas. My husband doesn't love them. My kids won't eat them. My husband will eat them. He'll be okay. He'll survive one night, but I want enchiladas. And so I think on top of everything you said, the space, the time, the energy, we're also then conditioned to, you know, put our, like, put ourselves last and our desires last.
Right. And what we have time for in a day, like my son last week had like a stomach bug. So I was making like white rice, plain pasta, whatever. Yeah. And I just announced to myself and anyone else who would listen, that's it. I'm done. I've made 5 stomach bug meals today. There's no more cooking. We can get takeout. We can eat popcorn. Yep. That's it. And and I can be a, you know, scorched earth kind of lady, but I do feel that, you know, in those moments where someone really needs, you're attending to someone who can't do anything for themselves. Then you don't get what you want and because you don't have time for that one. And that's hard, but then you get Thai food and you're okay.
I mean,
Thai food does solve almost every problem.
I really need, I was watching, I just was saying, I started, do you watch Somebody Feed Phil?
No.
Olivia God, Cole. It's my favorite show. I got to get Phil Rosenthal. So he, you know.
I've heard of the show, but I've never watched it.
Well, it's a beautiful show because it's really, it's about food, but it really, he's just a fantastic human. And it's about culture and community. And he goes into all these places and highlights, you know, these small restaurants. And so he just, the new season just came out and he's in Mumbai. And the Indian food, I was like, literally my mouth was like watering while I was watching the show. I was like, I need Indian food so badly. You know, I think, that there's
Indian food.
I was just telling my friend the story about, we were talking about noodles today, how there was 2 Thai places by the apartment that I had with my ex in Queens. And we never could agree on which place to order from because one place had what he said was better pad Thai, but it was more expensive and the portions were smaller. And I wanted the place that had, I thought, good pad Thai, but the portions were bigger and it was cheaper. I just wanted more pad Thai.
Like, that was always like, more pad Thai.
I was like, I just want more. I want more bad, more mediocre pad Thai works for me.
But I think so, like,
Olivia's like, I just said the words Indian food, and now we have derailed the entire conversation.
No, No, I mean, before we finish up, I just want to say, Cole, I think so much of the conversation that you do so beautifully too is it's really a conversation about the gray area in life, mm-hmm. right? And about pivots and about being able to say, like, yeah, for 5 days we had takeout because both kids were sick, and then we're gonna now have hamburgers and broccoli and kind of like stay at home and cook for a couple more days, right? And it's like, yeah, you know, maybe you have a few years where your pockets of time of enjoying food are just those 3 bites of oregano. And then in a few years, you're going to go out with your husband and have a different food, right? It's not forever. And I think so much of that is related to anxiety, right? Of like, you know, you catastrophize.
Oh, hello.
Like, oh, right, I'm never going to eat out again, right? Whatever it is. But it's also, it's food, but it's everything else too, right? Mm-hmm. It's like, it's going to last this way forever. It's going to be this way forever. And food is such a great way for us to have a real like tool to show us like, you can have gray area. You can have French fries, like, you know, have popcorn at the movies with your kids. And then if you feel super bloated and yucky, have some water, right? It's not like there's like, you know, there's a way to do this. So I think it's about so much more of like connecting with yourself and learning. I mean, learning the language of your body, right? And
being
saying like there's a
yourself.
Yeah, like being kind and graceful, and there's a balance. And so I appreciate everything you do and your conversations about all of this, because it's about so much more than the food. And I think that's important.
And I just want to piggyback on what you said, which was so, I think, just so astute, that it's not forever, and the way we can tune into ourselves with food, because food is such a sensory experience. Mm-hmm. You know, I teach writing in addition to writing myself. And I had one of my students say recently in a class, I was teaching at UCLA, continuing ed, she said, I just don't know how to connect to like a description. I'm not good at writing descriptions. Mm. And I thought on the spot, I said, eat a piece of jalapeno pepper with your eyes closed and then write about that.
Mm.
And just having food be this direct line to knowing how we feel, to how our bodies are experiencing something. Mm-hmm. And as you say, that is constantly changing.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. True. And isn't it interesting that like, what a beautiful experiment and experience to then ground ourselves, mm-hmm. right? And say like, we are human. We are in this world. We are in community with other people. And it does go back to that sensory, you know, moment with food. And I love that. So before we let you go, is there any other food you would like to talk about with us that you've had lately? That really was...
I mean, this week has just been so much white rice.
I love white rice, by the way.
But I will say that now all I'm thinking about is Indian food because of what you just
said.
I'm glad
I can help you. You got to watch the show. You have to.
So I have to watch that show. But so I was thinking of making that oregano salad today, but now I've been completely
derailed.
And there's no apology because we always have oregano in the house, but when do we have an Indian food craving, right? So yeah, so I don't know. I will say I've been eating that salad a lot because I've been very, very into it.
What's your salad look like? Like what's the substance of the salad that you like to make?
Such a great question.
I love
so
salads.
It's like whatever,
you know,
lettuce.
I love salads, and I hate when I make them and people are like, you know, that salad has a lot of calories in it. I'm like, do you think I'm only eating it because I hate myself? Like, I'm eating it because I like it. Like,
that's
it
the title
tastes
of
good.
Cole's next book. Just shut up. Yes, I'm here for it, Cole. Yeah.
So whatever, like lettuce, like a nice little like gem, butter, or mains, one of those is always nice, but I'll whatever. And then roasted red pepper. Pepperoncini, because I just think that tang is crucial. If there's no pepperoncini in the house, there's a new plan made. Salad can't happen.
Yeah, I understand that.
Yep.
I have some olives in the house now that I'm really enjoying. I like a good, like a garbanzo or cannellini.
I love a bean in the salad.
Is in there, right?
Yeah.
A shake of hemp seeds. What? I don't know. I just saw someone say that, and now I do that.
For a little crunch. I love it.
For a little crunch. And maybe celery. Chop up some celery. Can't do a raw carrot in a salad because I don't have the time to slice a carrot in the fashion that one must do to make them good in
what
the salad.
What would that fashion be?
I think like a mandolin slice.
Yeah, I'm agreeing with
right?
you.
Right? Yeah. So it doesn't happen.
You could buy shredded carrots at the grocery store, though.
Yeah, that's true. I could do that.
Which
I
might be nice.
Yeah. All right. I'll take that. I'll take that in. That's noted. That's
I
noted.
Love shredded carrots.
and then the dressing is just red wine vinegar, olive oil, salt, pepper, oregano.
So good. So classic.
I just pour it on the salad and then I chop it up to mix the dressing in as I'm chopping up the salad.
Amazing. I love an olive oil and salt combination on the salad. Like, it's just like oily and buttery. I mean, oily and salty. Like, it's so delicious.
And I recently discovered, I'm probably the last person, to use a citrus and a vinegar. What? Yeah, I know you're nodding like you know this, but I didn't really think of
idea. Like, I have to do it more. We do, I do a salad, which I can tell you, would you like me to tell you about the salad?
Yes, obviously.
So we do it, we do chicken and salad. We're doing the chicken, and we did chicken and roast potatoes, but it's a salad and I just buy, it's called like the bistro mix from the store and it's got beets in it and it's got like some like arugula in it. And then I chop that up. I do red onions. I do olives.
Oh,
I do
onions,
some
yes.
sort of cheese. So I do either a feta or if I can find like a sheep, like a manchego or like something that I can eat, well, I'll shred it up and put it in there. But for feta, I chop it. And then I do like either pumpkin seeds or some chopped up pistachios. Yeah, I really like those. And then I just do lime and olive oil and salt. And it's very good. And sometimes I throw in some cannellini beans. Oh, and tomatoes. Yes, and tomatoes. And I just I dice everything up really small. Yeah.
Do you ever use tahini in your – like sometimes I'll make a vinaigrette and
that's
then I'll
a good
put a
idea.
Tablespoon of tahini chop that all up.
That's not, I should, but you know what I'll do sometimes if I'm out of things, we usually have hummus in the house. So I'll mix some hummus with a little bit of olive oil, which is almost it's like a thick dressing, which is nice.
Yeah,
and I'll mix that in.
Creamy,
yeah. So it's similar, but I love tahini. I haven't bought it here though.
You know what I've been doing and then we'll close is, when we do,
well,
talk about my salad is instead of doing, I don't,
a new podcast
tacos.
Will tell me about your salad.
Tell me about your salad. I don't love tacos. I'm going to be honest. I don't like, they don't. It's not my
because
favorite
of the
thing.
Structural issue.
Yeah, but I love taco flavors.
Yeah, I understand.
So what I'll do is I do the shredded lettuce as a salad base, and then I put the jalapenos, like the pickled jalapenos, a little sour cream. And what I'll do is it becomes like almost like a dip.
Yeah.
And then I'll take the corn chips and dip into it, so it's like a salad dip.
I love
and
that.
And it's so good. So good. Yeah.
Do you ever add meat?
I
that,
do. So or... sometimes I'll do like the taco meat or like a chicken, or avocado. I love crunchy in salad. Mm-hmm, right? I really do. And I'll do a little of the taco sauce. Like, so it's like all this essentially some cheese and sometimes some beans, and I'll shake it all together and I'll just use it like a dip, and it's so good. And it's
that
so filling.
Fantastic.
Yeah, so filling. But we could talk about salads with you forever, Cole. But I know you have probably other things to do. Well, Cole, it's always a pleasure to talk to you.
All
and
right.
Where can people find you? How can they buy the paperback and the hardcover of What's Eating Us?
You can buy What's Eating Us wherever you buy your books, indie bookstore, Amazon, wherever your preferred book buying locale is. You can find me on Instagram at my name, Cole Kasdan, and my website is colekasdan.com. And it is always such a joy to talk to you both about feminism, capitalism, salads, all of it.
I think next time what we'll talk about is domestic equity in food.
Whew.
I think that's an important topic.
And sandwiches? To talk about. Can we talk about sandwiches?
Yeah, we'll do sandwiches. We'll do sandwiches at the end.
I love talking
about
sandwiches.
Put it on the docket. Cole, we appreciate you so much. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you so much.
Thank you for listening to today's story. We're always here, and we're so proud of you. A Fresh Story is produced by Fresh Starts Registry, the first and only platform for everything you need to begin again. You can read the show notes and learn more about today's episode at afreshstory.com.